Hello there. Good morning. Happy Saturday. You are tuned in to Business Lingon Talk with Leo and Claudine. Today is Saturday. It's 10 a.m. What's up, Claudine?
Not too much. Working, and we have some good stuff to talk about.
Yes.
Cannot wait.
Wow. Hey, so how you been?
I have been fantastic. Had a great holiday weekend and really just digging in. Summer is really going to be around the corner, and we're actually planning on 4th of July weekend.
Already? Oh, yeah.
Are you guys doing four-day weekend?
Yes, yes. Gosh, we just came back from being out of town and planning already. My family is a planning family. We have stuff booked for like...
Really? My sister does that. Hopefully she's listening.
We're planning it.
Shout out to my sister who literally sits down the first day of the year, like January 1, 2.
And she plans everything.
With a calendar.
I can tell you where we're going to be next summer, already in 2020.
Really?
We're going to be in Orlando.
Really?
Already.
I used to live there.
Booked.
Really?
Well, long story. I'm not going to fill you in with the drama. But yeah, so there's a lot going on, and family is, you know, just great, and business is good. Lot of feedback. Thank you so much for the emails and the phone calls.
Yes.
And I even got a text message the other day. That's great. Claudine, I know you're getting some feedback.
Yeah.
The show is working. Thank you for supporting the show, Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. And we started to kind of get a pretty good idea who listens to the show.
Right.
Which is really cool. So we know that... most likely you are a business owner or want to be starting a business,
right.
And you're tuning into the show to understand all the shenanigans that we talked about, you know, the business and the legal stuff and the opportunities, entrepreneurship. We also know that you live in and around the area, and that you're commuting, that you're very busy, that you got a lot of things to do, and you have chosen to listen to our show. And so we want to make it actionable. You know, this is not like gossip and on the news. This is like running a business.
Right. This is not, my friend kind of said that we should do something like this. You know, you hear the story when people will come to me and they'll be in the process of implementing something. And, oh, really? Where'd you hear to do that? Oh, well, I was talking to a friend of mine. And is your friend a CPA? No. And so it's good to go to people who actually practice in the area.
What they preach?
Well, what they preach.
That's crazy. Crazy talk. What?
Well, protest.
You're not just a doctor on TV?
Right. No. And so it's good to really surround yourself with people who are in the area of business where you are looking to either grow or get advice. So, you know, I think the kind of old adage is don't go to the plumber if you have a broken arm. Go to the people who are doing that area of business that you need help with or need advice, or perhaps you recognize it within yourself that that's just an area that doesn't appeal to you or you're not really great at. We all know that, you know, that would be why I work with you, because I don't like numbers and I'm not fond of them and don't really care too much about them, even though I know how important they are. So I make sure to ensure that I am working with somebody who loves what he does and does it well and can guide me down the road. So we are going to tiptoe into a completely different subject today.
I know. I'm a little scared.
You should be, because this could get you in trouble. Let's not let you do this.
Yes. Tell us about it.
Employee theft.
Uh-oh.
And what does employee theft mean to a business?
Probably is never going to happen to you, right, if you're listening to the show. Or maybe.
No, it does. You know, because it is true. You know, even stealing pens from the business is theft. it is true. Although,
right.
I'm not sure too many of us care about it. We kind of look at that kind of stuff as the cost of doing business. But employee theft is a huge, huge issue.
Yes. Yep.
And there are things that fall in that category that I think a lot of people don't recognize that. And I years ago worked for a nonprofit that had a call center, and the employees logged in to their computer systems when their shift started, and if they got up to leave, to go to lunch, take a break, you know, whatever, they log in and out of their computer system. And because then the phone calls wouldn't come to that computer, it would go to somebody who's sitting at their computer.
Okay.
But what it did is it gave the company the ability to really count everybody's minutes and productivity and how many calls did you take. It was like the hyper version of employee management. And
wow.
It was super unsettling for me. It was a great exposure, but certainly that's not how my personality, what wasn't natural for my personality to manage employees to that extent and literally have reports run on a biweekly basis of how many minutes each person took on their bathroom break or their lunch break, you know, how many people were spending how many minutes, and then what did those minutes result in with each client that they were on the phone with. So there are variations of it, and I kind of go down that road because in that environment, what we were looking for were people who steal time.
Wow.
And that is really a big nebulous.
Right.
Because
the big gray area.
Most businesses don't have the ability to track employees. So to that extent, that was just a unique business that had a unique set of circumstances. But, you know, certainly in my business, it would be for me to track every minute that one of my staff members was not completely focused on their work would require me to dedicate a tremendous amount of time, probably more. So if they were not focused on their work and say they're on their cell phone or you know, taking care of personal stuff during work hours for 10 minutes, it would probably require me 15 minutes to track that, figure it out, document it. So it becomes a very difficult thing for business owners and managers and key personnel to deal with is stealing time. And that's just one of
you open up a Pandora's box of just, I mean, that alone. All I'm going to say is, we have a lot of notes and stuff to go over with today. But on that note, one of the things that I do, and I think I've said this before, I know I talked to you about it. When I'm looking at a set of financial statements,
right,
for a company, I start with the profit and loss. And the first thing that I look at within the profit and loss is the gross profit as a percentage of sales.
Right.
Right. Then I look at the expense line. And within the expense line, the below the line, I'm looking at your staffing, your wages as a percentage of your sales. And every industry has their own metrics, acceptable metrics. Some are 30, some are 35. If you're in the professional services, you know, like white collars, you know, doctors, lawyers, and you expect to have a little more than the average. In that, like if I'm expecting 30% sale, as a percentage of sales for your staffing, it would be a little higher if in the professional services side. But anyway, that is the first area. That is the most costly area of your business. Second is your rent.
Right.
So you're saying is that if I take a company whose payroll is $2 million, right, regardless of the revenue, that's $2 million that you as a business owner are spending in paying your wages and, you know, you have to deal with the compliance. How much of that $2 million is really producing the revenue?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm absolutely.
And you went there.
We're taking it right there.
Oh my gosh, you're putting a knife right through it.
Right there, right from the very beginning. And how do you deal with it? What is it you do to deal with it?
There's a lot that I do. But suffice to say, we're about to go into a break. Maybe we come back to it. This is just a whole nother show just to talk about it specifically. When you're actually an employee that it should be working 40 hours, it's only working 20, but you're paying them for 40. What if they're on salary?
And that's
how do you deal with that?
So many people, and we
so many ways that we can go there.
We can we'll talk about that after the break because salary is a whole nother challenge.
Which lanes do we want to go today? So we want to talk about employee theft, truly employee theft. That's the missing money or stuff,
right?
Stay tuned because we're going to talk about what has it done to your not just for your business but for the economy, and what does it cost the U.S. and what does that turn into tax dollars? So there's a lot to cover on employee theft. It's not the most convenient and most rosy topic, but it's one that is important nonetheless. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. everybody, welcome back. Second segment here, Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. We're talking about employee theft. So, before we get into the thick of it, you got some stats for us there, Claudine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
how bad is this?
Okay, so let's just go through the top five thefts that businesses incur. Money is the most common asset stolen from employers. There's no question. If it's laying around and if it's out there, you risk the potential that it's going to get stolen. As we were discussing before the break, time is the second most stolen thing from an employer is time. Mm. And to me, that's a really interesting one because it's really difficult to identify. It's incredibly difficult to manage. And, just how much micromanaging do you want to do on your employees to the extent that, are they wasting time? So supplies, and that's, I think we mentioned it last segment, pens, paper, just stuff from the employer. Company merchandise, company property. So if your company sells products, if you're a retailer, you deal with this upfront and personal. So as a retail, company merchandise is probably the number one thing. And I think these are kind of just listed in general order of overall, not industry specific. And the last thing, and this is something we're really, really dealing with, is information. People don't realize what intellectual property is.
Mm.
They don't understand what trade secrets are. Trade secrets are anything within a company that is not publicly known. So that is client list, processes. If you have created for our office, for example,
prefer vendor relationships, etc.
We have intake forms. Mm-hmm. For different areas of business. So if we have somebody coming in wanting to do a living trust, we have a particular intake form for them that we've created as part of our process. And so that is trade secret. That is company property. If you walk out the door and you take a copy of my intake form and you make it yours, you've just stolen from me. So if you are, say, a staff member at my business and you leave to go to work for another company, and you've taken any of my forms, my processes, did some really interesting research on this, and I won't go too far down the rabbit hole, but there is an idea that has been, they have attempted to float here in California that works in other states, but not here in California, is the idea of an inevitable disclosure.
Inevitable
disclosure.
Hmm.
So when we're talking about non-disclosure agreements and confidentiality.
Oh, the NDAs.
Yeah. When an employee comes to work for me, they sign an NDA or a non-disclosure agreement, agreeing to not disclose any of our internal information. Let's just say the employees worked for me for 10 years and over that course of 10 years, that employee has gained a tremendous amount of knowledge just by working. So they know things that we've tried as a business that maybe have worked, that haven't worked. And there's just a volume of knowledge that if that employee left and went to be, say, an office manager, left me as an office manager and went to be an office manager for another law firm.
Yeah. Then what?
There's a certain amount of information that is just going to be inevitably disclosed that in order for them to perform their job.
Right.
Certain things that that company may try and they would say, no, we're not going to do that because I've tried it at my previous employer and it's a terrible idea and it's not going to work. And I can tell you why it's not going to work and so on and so forth.
Right.
So California has a position that we don't want to restrict employees moving about in the workplace so they can go to one company or another company. And so we don't do non-compete clauses and we don't do inevitable disclosure where we say you cannot leave me as an office manager and go to ABC law firm down the street and work as an office manager because inevitably you're going to disclose something. So I'm going to prohibit you from taking that job.
Mm.
California doesn't do that.
Oh, okay.
Other states do. The federal, even federal courts in California have expressly empowered that concept. Our state courts don't do it, but it was an attempt by businesses to say, no, I don't want you going to work for my competition after you've been with me for 15 years and you've gained all of this knowledge and all of these understandings of processes and procedures. And because I know there's no way you could possibly perform that job over there without
fully utilizing the knowledge that you learned over here.
Right.
Right.
So just kind of an interesting thing. Information is a huge, huge, huge subject in our legal world, and disclosing it and stealing it. And you know, we're really hearing a lot about it on the national level with China.
Right, right. So you asked me about the money part, right?
Yes.
During the break. So here's where I get involved. I don't necessarily look, this type of thing just kind of falls on my lap from time to time. It's rare, but when it does happen, it's a big thing. Forensic accounting.
Right.
Typically forensic because you're looking much like in real forensics, you know, where there's murder and then you're trying to deconstruct what happened and you're looking for the smoking gun and
right.
you're looking to who did it, you know, the DNA and et cetera. Well, the same applies in accounting. When there's money, there's theft that involves money. There's usually a paper trail. There's
right.
usually something that was left behind, crumbs that are left behind by the person. It's very difficult to completely hide theft that
or
involves
something new that
currency.
Doesn't belong.
Yeah, so there are actually firms that only do this. They specialize in forensic and publicly traded big stuff.
Right.
What I have come into contact or I have worked with situations with, there is two partners don't like it. They started like, you know, remember the whole thing. One was the technician. One was the salesperson.
Right.
For
right.
instance, they were children, you know, childhood friends, started a business and things started out great until they weren't and they had problems and they started having a falling out and they started not trusting each other. And one decided to, even though they were 50-50 partners, with equal voting rights. And so they couldn't give one money without giving to the other, right? To
right.
do their right.
right.
Well, this person, one of them said, well, there's a better way or there's a alternative. And then basically manufacture a vendor that, think about it, right? So, you know, the course of paying business. So there's an accountant, right? Or there's a bookkeeper in-house.
Right.
Somebody who is not trained, who started as a receptionist, who became an office manager, who is eventually cutting checks and having one of the owners signed.
Right.
Somehow, this vendor came about, nobody questioned it, nobody asked the proper information. If you're a vendor, fill out a W-9 form, try to connect. This is truly a vendor going through the whole process. And there are accounting processes and procedures that you do to ensure that the theft like this doesn't happen. In this case, it just basically went below the radar. So one of the owners started signing checks to this vendor to the tune of, you know, 30 grand a year over two, three years. So
wow.
60, 90 grand were missing until something bad happened. And then one check bounced or something happened. And then they needed a second opinion. And that's when we come into play.
Right.
So it's ugly. There's legal stuff. And then we have to produce, have to look for and really connect the dots. So whatever suspicions there are about, they become clear. It becomes right. evidence in a court of law.
Right.
So it's embezzlement.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's how bad it can get on the money side. And this is when owners are involved. But I don't know if we have the stat here, and this is something that I knew. This is a stat that I knew because I'm aware of it before. I've studied it before. 85% of employee theft is brand new, meaning that the person never really stole before in a prior job, and they had access to cash.
Really?
85% of all theft by employees is first time.
First timers. Wow. I would have never guessed that. I would have never guessed that.
And you know why?
Opportunity.
Desperation and opportunity. The person that if you watch shows like American Greed, you know, that presents the outliers, the 10% that are just criminals, right?
Right.
Most people are not criminals. They don't start out that way. And innocently, you know, you can argue there's a single, you know, parent who doesn't have enough money and they cannot make it to the next paycheck. And he just innocently says, you know, I have access to the bank account. You know, I can write myself a check. When you don't have systems and procedures, so the same person that cuts the checks, signs the check, or the same person that puts the vendor, pays the vendor, all of that happens. And that person notices that is missing and it's under duress. and they don't have money to pay the rent and they're about to be evicted. And you can argue, oh my gosh, I'm just going to take this $1,000 and I promise to put them back. Nobody's going to ever know what happened. And until next thing happens, pretty soon, and I need $1,500 for this. And that's how people end up embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars over a long period of time.
Absolutely. And when I've come in contact with it from our end, it has been employees who make the, and this goes back to, it's really important to figure out a way to have good employee-employer relations.
Yeah.
Because the employee that justifies it because the boss is a jerk or the owner's making all this money and I'm making, you know, pennies.
I've heard that before.
Once the person can justify it. We had a client recently, actually about a year ago, who had an employee. Actually, it had become the culture of the business where they had many, many long-term employees, like 20 plus years, many of them. And probably the top five were all 20 plus year employees.
Veterans.
And one employee, because it had been run very friendly, very family oriented, we never suspected each other. We didn't put systems in place to, red flag if things like this were going on, because we didn't want our friend to, you know, feel awkward. And we wouldn't want to ever suspect so-and-so would ever do something wrong. So, you know, we wouldn't make them sign in and sign out and so forth. Employee had been embezzling. She did human resources. She also did payroll. She also signed checks. She approved payroll. She approved all the 401k, you know, entries, who got what percentages. And there was really no oversight until some management changed. A new person came in and somebody went, wait a minute, that just doesn't seem right. And sure enough, got to looking into it. Person had been giving themselves raises for a number of years. Unauthorized, on top of the raises that they were already getting. Nobody knew.
Wow.
So it's really important to have employer-employee relationship. And that means, yes, we work as family, we care about each other as family, but it's okay to have processes in place that that will red flag, that will, you know, be a tripwire.
Okay, so here's some stats that I want you guys to know. Listening to this show, so Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine, so listen up. Businesses lose 20% of every dollar to employee theft. So this is considering the statistics from the American Society of Employers. So this is nationally, at a national level. That's just crazy numbers. 20% of every dollar, so 20 cents for every dollar. There goes your profit.
Well, what's the number on 2 million?
400,000.
It's a lot of money.
20% of employees are aware of fraud at their companies, including theft of office items, false claims, hours work. We just spent time talking about that, and inflated expense accounts. This whole expense reimbursement, it's a big deal. I mean, technology, you know, where there is a need, somebody will step up and try to fill that need, right? Software that is detected to kind of handle this whole thing about employee expense reimbursements,
mm-hmm.
and track them. So 55% of perpetrators are managers. 44% of workers say the company could do more to, they even say themselves, hey, you guys are a little too loosey-goosey here. You could tie things up here. The U.S. retail industry loses $53.6 billion with a B a year due to employee theft.
Retail gets hit hard. Boy, they get hit
Man,
hard.
So whatever business you think you're about to start, think carefully and think twice before starting in the retail world. This alone should scare you. Employee theft is rampant. Right.
Rampant.
And then you have companies that actually hire securities just to be outside of the store. Who do you think is paying for that? That's not the mall, right? That's the employee. That's the actual employer. That's the business.
Well, loss prevention in your big retailers is huge. I mean, that's a huge portion of what they do.
And does that stop theft?
No.
No.
We're not allowed to. No. And particularly in California, your big stores don't attempt to stop shoplifters. they don't attempt to stop them.
What?
They track them. They'll call the police. If the police can get to the parking lot by the time, you know, they may distract them and stand and talk with them. But if somebody is actually actively stealing stuff, they're told hands off because of the liability. We just had here in Turlock three gals come into the Ulta makeup store and literally with bags and literally just grab stuff off of the shelf.
And
they got caught. They've just recently, I saw their mugshots today.
You're saying that if I'm the shop owner and I see people stealing, don't try to stop him because they may sue you because you heard him on the way down while they're trying to stop him?
Yep.
From stealing your stuff?
Or probably not so much that too, but you're talking about workers' comp claims.
Oh.
So if your employee gets hurt in the process.
A soft tissue injury, liability, and then, well, okay, wait a minute. Hey, there's so much to talk about. So, hey, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. Stay tuned. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Well, we're having too much fun. Hey, you know, how can we make such a boring topic fun? It's just us talking about it. So, hey, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. We're talking about employee theft and what pervasive this is, you know, and how it permeates through all areas, all businesses. It does not discriminate, no matter what industry you're in. So, hey, Claudine, do you want to take us through it?
This is really, really important because, you know, either you have a business where you've figured it out after the fact that, you know, your employees have been stealing from you, or, you know, they've left you, and when they left, they took half of the business with them, and, you know, you've already been bitten by it. But this is like the call to action.
Mm.
Stop and think about your business, whether you're in a service business like mine, or whether you're in a product retail business. You have to put in place particular provisions so that you will have those red flags come up, or you'll have the, you know, the wire trip, so to speak, when, you know, to alert you that these things are happening. And it's interesting because you were just talking about an 80% rule.
I did say 85, but I did not know that you had these notes here.
No.
Do you want to read them?
You didn't know. And so here we go. We're gonna validate.
Yes, I'm not crazy.
You're not crazy, and you're telling it like it is. So the in many companies and people who do fraud prevention have operated by what they call the 10-10-80 rule, which says that 10% of employees will never steal, 10% will always steal,
yes,
and 80% will go either way depending on the opportunity. That just is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. And I had somebody who was talking to me about this. In fact, we, in preparation for the show, her and I had a long conversation about this subject. And she owns a business as well and had recently gone to a function and seen that somebody else who was at the function had taken a number of products from her business, and they were now at a third location. And she never had permission to take these products. And she was at this, you know, completely a non-related function and saw a whole bunch of her products there and thought, oh my gosh, how did these end up here? And then realized that one of the...
with my brand.
With her brand on it. And that was the first thing I said. I said, are you sure they were yours? And she said, yes, they're stamped with my company logo on them.
Wow.
And I thought, wow. And the realization, and this person is a friend. And how do you deal with that?
Do you deal with it?
I think the first thing is you have to assess, is this a person who's maybe just overstepping their friendship boundary, Like coming to your house, having a cup of coffee. You're out maybe in the yard having a cup of coffee and they walk off.
And walking away with a blender?
No, walk away with, you know, you're having a cup of coffee. Or maybe you have a couple of drinks and you get in the car to go somewhere and they walk off with your cup. And a week later or they come back, oh, hey, you know, ended up with your coffee cup.
I was on the phone and I didn't know I had it.
Yeah, technically, yes, stealing, theft, technically, I suppose. But it was a friend who basically overstepped their boundary. And is that the case with an employee? Is that just an employee who maybe didn't really realize that this was a no-no?
I like to think I have a moral compass and I know what right and wrong, but to take something that doesn't belong to me, it just spells trouble.
You know what? There's employers though that are very, very generous and have been generous to, particularly that you have a long-term employee, and the long-term employee says, "What well, he would give it to me if you know he wouldn't object."
And that's not entitlement.
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not arguing in favor of this,
right.
But I'm just saying this could be the mindset as opposed to the employee who's intentionally trying to steal from you,
This is innocent and misguided.
It's misguided. And so, you know, what do you say to that person? You have to say something. You absolutely have to.
So what do you say? Stop doing that.
This is not okay. And, my opinion, and if I was to counsel a client who was dealing with this, I would absolutely say, if you're not comfortable having this conversation with the employee, call me. I'll have it. Because we do that. And I'll sit down with the employee and look them directly in the eye very clearly. And without any uncertain circumstances, we will discuss it at length, explain where it is not okay, and we will not do this again. But so many employers have a hard time having those tough conversations. And I'm telling you, if you're one of those out there and you're listening to this now, know the conversation has to happen, even if it's not you
call
doing it.
Call Claudine today.
Call us, we'll do it.
www.sharon-law.com.
Or you could call your accountant, who would be perfectly happy to explain the forensic accounting and how this doesn't work on the forensic accounting side. But it's very interesting that managers account for 55% of employee theft.
Right.
Does that surprise you?
No.
Me neither.
I've counseled. I've been part of terminations or mass terminations and layoffs or firings and multiple companies over many years. And one thing that it's always sort of the common thread is with long-term employees, where the boundary line between friendship and employer-employee relationship is blurred.
Yeah.
So I always advise, you know, and particularly as you move up in the company, is I'm asking the owner, you know, when do you know they're not longer an employee? Are they, how do you handle that? You know, people that actually go on trips or fishing trips or do stuff that is, you know, how do you manage that? It's not easy, right? But then you have people who think they start doing things, but he wouldn't mind because we're friends.
Right.
Yet, legally, you have a legal responsibility with this person who happens to be an employee, and you have all these responsibilities. So it's really hard to just be friends with somebody, don't you think?
And we mentioned this a while ago on a previous show about the conundrum of being the CEO or the owner of the company, and that you feel like you're constantly in this corner where you want to have your employees treat the business like they own it. I think we've all said it.
Right.
Right. We want the employees to be invested in the business and have some ownership, you know, at least feel some sort of, responsibility to that business. But at the same time, when does it cross the line? So for example, we had a conversation in our office recently, that I definitely, and particularly because I employ attorneys who, you know, their whole entire existence is to give opinions. Right. So yeah. I do involve the folks in my office with a lot of the decisions. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this, or what do you think about that? Or, you know, this is what I want to do. You know, what do you think of this contract that I've drafted? Or, you know, do you have any opinions? Mm-hmm. And so, but at what point do the employees begin to take over more and more, quote unquote, ownership, and start to act like and perform like and pretend, and then maybe feel entitled to some extent that they, if I don't follow their lead, if I don't do what they recommend, you know, because at the end of the day, I have the final decision.
Correct.
And so when you're setting up those relationships is really where you start to tiptoe over this line, and you really start to treat employees, their family. We care about them. We spend so much time with each other. We genuinely do care about them, but at what point do they start to act like the owner of the company?
Mm.
And how do you balance that?
I think I always have to remember, for me, I have to be aware of my surroundings at all time. If I'm the owner of the company, I always err on the side of caution. I have, you know, prior to starting my own company, and this is my fourth company, I was a higher level executive at multiple companies, and there's a protocol, there's a way you conduct yourself. I'm just trained to mm-hmm. think that way. Never be too careless, even in social settings. You know, you have to, people that are in management, they have to be very careful, because in some of the things can be misconstrued in the media if the shareholders say it. The way you consume alcoholic beverages or not, right. It's a big deal when you're an employee of a company. And it starts as little as that. And also how you conduct with others, how you never give the appearance of misappropriation of anything.
Right.
So that to me is that's how you set the boundaries of the, you have to be first and foremost, if you're the CEO of your company, be a professional. I think if you are that and you put those boundaries around the relationship, I think people act when there's gray areas.
Correct. That's called opportunity.
Right? Don't create opportunities. Right. I can only speak to, you know, in the accounting side, I always advise when I walk into an accounting department and I'm asked to oversee the accounting department, I'm always looking with how quickly can the money leave the company when the owner's not knowing.
Right.
And it's like hacker trying to get into a company, figure out what is the weakest point of entry, right? And then fortify it so that doesn't happen. So I'm looking for ways for the trail of cash. When money is paid to the company, how does it make its way to the bank? When money leaves the bank from the company, how does it make way to the vendor? And there's any opportunity in between for anyone to take advantage of it. Remove those opportunities.
Right.
That's how I come about it. And that is done through systems and procedures. Multiple people, multiple check signers. Two check signers in big companies where one checks on the other. The person that's the entry of accounts payable is not the person that cuts the checks.
Right.
Don't know the vendor. So they have to lean. There's multiple points of failure. Never want to have a single point of failure in your accounting.
It's interesting. I have a client who is I would refer to as a medium size, you know, roughly 50 employees here in the Valley. And they have a key person who works for them. And this key person oversees most all of the operations, not out in the field, but internal operations. And this person is familiar with everything from the taxes to what the bylaws say to who's employed and not. And this person approves all checks, but has no check writing ability and refuses to have any, and refuses to have even a key to the office. Refuses.
Wow.
Because she's got so much power within the company. If something were to ever come up missing and it were to be an after hour situation, she doesn't even have a key to the office.
I love that. I mean, that's basically putting yourself to higher accountability.
Right. Absolutely.
But that's not the norm. That's an exception to the rule.
Yep.
By the way, I don't see that a lot.
It's something that you can put in practice. So that key person, like I said, she approves the checks. She goes through the invoices on accounts payable. but she does not sign anything.
The good news, if you're, you know, to our listeners, there's many ways to fix this. This is not, this should not kill your business. So anyway, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudia. We're having fun talking about employee theft. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For me, this is like time off. I was like, this is a great day.
We're having so much fun. Come on, let's bring this home. Employee theft. Who would have thought such a boring topic could be so lively? But it is. And you know what? We're here to protect you. And why? Because we care, right? And there is the cool thing about what Claudine and I do is because we complement each other. So you have accounting questions, you have growth questions, you have profit questions. I am the Chief Profit Officer of Greenland Advisors, and please look us up, www.greenlandhq.com, or call our office at 559-207-3148. You know what? I will talk to you, I will counsel you, I will help you. And, you know, maybe it's a great fit. Maybe we can help you get to the next level. We are growing businesses left and right throughout the state, and we are profitable. We help you be profitable and sustainable and grow in scale so you can have a profit exit strategy. So, Claudine, so, you know,
yeah,
tell us.
We are a business and real estate and now estate planning firm down in Turlock, and we are moving up to Modesto. We're actually opening another office in Modesto.
Yeah.
In the process of that. So we're excited. I know I've been kind of shouting that out a little bit recently. And we are really excited. I want to just give a shout out to my associate who's been out on medical leave, who's now returning. Give a shout out to Teresa Mason.
She's coming back. Yes.
Teresa's coming back. And Teresa is
powerhouse,
heading up our wills and trusts area of our practice. So she is offering a $500 discount for anybody who wants to establish a living trust during the month of end of May and throughout June. Teresa's fantastic. We're so thrilled to have her back. And she, again, will be heading up our estate planning, wills, and trusts department. You can find us at www.sharon-law.com, and that's SHERRON-law.com, 209-427-2200.
Awesome. So let's bring this home. So employee theft, we talked about on the accounting side, we talked about some stats, we talked about on the legal side. Where do we go from here, Claudine?
Well, I suppose the big question is, how do we avoid this?
Yeah, how do we avoid it?
How do I hire that 10% that'll never steal?
Well, you know, that's hard to, you know what I've learned about, probably I have personally hired over 500 people, the prime of my professional career, whether directly or indirectly, or my within our different departments, subordinates of mine have hired. And one thing I can tell you, there is no bulletproof way to hire the perfect employee. You're going to have to go, you know, it's hire, hire slow, fire fast, you know?
That's funny. I was speaking with a client yesterday, and we said the exact same thing.
Hire slow, fire fast. Or something like that.
Actually, let me take that back. Her comment to me was, I hire fast, fire fast. Right now, the market is such that the businesses are growing and that we need to put the boots on the ground as quickly as possible. Every employee comes to you with their best story. When you have the interview, they're not, that person is not going to sit there and tell you, yeah, I've probably stolen a little bit too much from the last, you know, couple, two or three employers. You're getting the best rendition of them during the interview. It's almost to the point of, I'd rather just watch your actions than hear about it. So just come in, and if you can get the job done, you'll stick around. If not, you're probably going to be out.
True story. All right. big company hires an employee, key position, needed to juggle multiple calendars, and amazing interview, blew everybody. I was even part of that interview. I was blown away, right? But then I know better, right? I said, check all the references, you know, because CFOs oversees the whole HR department. So make sure that all the risk is there, all the paperwork is up to snuff, the HR manager, everything checked out. This person was brilliant, glowing recommendations. And within 3 weeks, we're ready to let her go.
I know. And you know what? Especially at the top level positions, companies have a tendency to spend sometimes months through the hiring process.
So
the searching.
The moral of the story, you just don't know, right?
You
will never be fully ready to get that perfect person. So on average, in my experience, for every 10 people that you hire, one will be amazing. And the other nine would just, they will be talented, but won't be compliant. Or we'll be compliant but not talented, or we'll have talent and compliance, but they'll be just not, you know, showing up to work, which
right.
is, you know, character issues. And it's really, so what I really look for is people with character. You can teach somebody, you know, in your field, of course, you know, if you're looking for an attorney, they have to have the attorney, they have to, you know, the degree,
right.
they have to have gone, but put that aside, right?
Aside from skill set.
Character is a big deal for me. I can teach somebody anything if they have the character. But if you don't have the character, I don't care how much you know, because I know you won't care.
Right. And you can't really teach character. I mean, you can inspire people.
Right.
I just don't think that it's not something that you can say, okay, when you walk in the door, you're going to be of certain character. And you can be whatever character on the other side of that door. That's just not how it works. It's kind of your fabric. It's
people,
who you are.
People put the best foot forward in an interview. And it's almost, you have to expect it to be rehearsed. They know the questions. They've done homework in your company. They probably, I mean, really good interview. There are people that are excellent interviewees.
Right.
They'll come ready. They'll know everything about
right.
the founders. They'll find everything on social media. They'll know, they almost feel like they already know you.
Right.
Right. Because they want in.
And that's funny, because that's why my client yesterday was saying, I'm hiring fast and firing fast. That's just how that is. And this was probably the third person who had been terminated over the course of maybe 6 or 8 weeks. And business is growing and they need people. And, you know, it's at this point, just come to work. And if you can get the job done, you're going to stay.
So business owners, don't want to obsess too much. You're bound to hire one or two bad people in your career. So just don't obsess over it. You know, but you gotta have the right, you gotta obey the HR laws. You gotta play with the rules within the state. You cannot legal, there are certain areas you can't go at it without really knowing what questions to ask in the interview process. And there's a minefield, right, Claudina, things that you can ask and get in trouble before you even hire somebody.
Absolutely.
So don't go at it alone. Get somebody that helps. I know that's one of your areas of expertise, just helping people navigate the whole labor law. But you never really know. So once you hire somebody and assume that they have the character, they're going to have the skill set, and they're going to stick around, there are things that you can do on your company to ensure that the time is not stolen from you, that money is not stolen from you,
right,
and the secrets are not stolen from you.
Right. And it doesn't have to cost you a whole lot. I can tell you that if you would sit down, and create the procedures and the policies, even if you create them in your own mind and just make a one-page list of things and sit down with your employees, whether it's one-on-one, department by department, or group by group. So if you have a group of people who are out in the field, they have a different set of circumstances than those that maybe work in the office. But you really, really want to have this conversation. We call it a knees under the table conversation, meaning we're all sitting under the table, we're looking across the table at each other,
wow.
and we're eye to eye, and we're saying,
"It's on."
Yeah, this is the message that I need you to understand, and that under no circumstances is this going to be okay. If you have a question, ask me. I'd rather you ask me if you can take a ream of paper home because your kid has a project and you're out of paper and you're running late to get home. I'd rather you just say, hey, can I take a ream of paper? Then at least I have the choice of saying, you know what, no way, that's not going to happen. Or, sure, go ahead, take some paper. And then have the employee just presume. But that is the knees under the table conversation. It doesn't cost you anything. It may be a little bit uncomfortable, but it establishes the policies, and it puts everybody on the same page. And then that 80% who are likely, if the opportunity comes up, to steal, then maybe you can have affected those people. Because you're going to have 10, apparently, that are never going to steal. Yeah. You're going to have 10 that are always going to steal. And then you got a big bucket of 80%.
Who may or may not.
Who may or may not. And perhaps if you do that and just have that serious eye-to-eye conversation, at least you perhaps could affect them. And then they know that what your expectations are.
Here's a quick takeaway. If you have a small business and you have, you know, you should always have access to the bank accounts and never give any one of your employees the ability to do wires or money out of the company.
No.
So what I would do is look at the daily transactions of your business. You should know what's going on in and out of your business. It takes 5 minutes. You have you have an app for your bank account and your phone. Look to see if something looks suspicious, deal with it right then and there. Now, you should never be surprised. There is something that is called phishing. There's a technique that somebody who has gotten a hold of your debit card or your credit card can test the waters by taking 90 cents, 70 cents, or even a penny out of your account, and can do that several times to make sure you're watching and not questioning it.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon that becomes $30, $40, $50 a month. I've heard of situations in which business owners have thousands of dollars a year taken out by just this debits, who may not even be connected to employees. Just theft out of your account. So you gotta look at your bank account. Don't completely rely on, don't ever do bank balance accounting. I've said that in other shows. You have to have bookkeeping. You have to do your books. You have to understand profit. You have to understand, you know, the loss or profit of your business. But you gotta look, you can't be completely hands off your cash.
And I would really highly recommend, so if I, and I work with, again, a lot of folks in the construction industry where they have jobs and they do what, or they should be doing what's called job costing. Mm-hmm. I think every business has a way to take expenses and allocate them to particular jobs, or maybe it's not jobs, maybe it's areas of your business, but you should be, and if you're not doing it, your bookkeepers should be, looking at your expenses and allocating them to either particular processes in your business or jobs. In our case, it's clients. So if we spend X amount of dollars on filing fees, we, on a monthly basis, my paralegal goes through all the charges to ensure that those have been charged appropriately to the client. Everybody should be doing it. And if you don't have time, make sure your accountant comes up with some scenario where they can take those expenses and allocate them, because that is your tripwire. That's where you see it and you go, wait a minute, what?
Good stuff.
This doesn't
Good
have stuff. Any place to go.
Good stuff. So have we figured it all out? No. We want you to think about this as you go back to the office on Monday. How can you ensure that nothing is taken from you? That you should be profitable and sustainable and be able to keep all the money you make, and don't give an opportunity to somebody. Remember, 80% of people, we're not down on people. We just say, given our human nature, give somebody the opportunity to do something, they will. Don't let that happen to you. So you have been listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. I hope this was helpful to you. Was this a good topic?
It was a great topic for me. It's a great topic.
So we're wishing everyone a great weekend. Stay real, and we'll talk to you next week.